Ready to soundtrack your summer? With Red Bull Summer All Day Play, you choose a playlist that fits your summer vibe the best. Are you a festival fanatic, a deep end DJ, a road dog, or a trail mixer? Just add a song to your chosen playlist and put your summer on track. Red Bull Summer All Day Play. Red Bull gives you wings. Visit redbull.com/brightsummerahead to learn more. See you this summer.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. I don't know if you knew this, but anyone can get the same premium wireless for $15 a month plan that I've been enjoying. It's not just for celebrities. So do like I did and have one of your assistant's assistants switch you to Mint Mobile today. I'm told it's super easy to do at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. Intro rate first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with award-winning jazz conductor, producer, composer, and radio host, Mitch Glickman. His diverse career covers the fields of film, concerts, opera, and recordings. He is the founder and music director of the 68-member Symphonic Jazz Orchestra and also serves as director of music programs for the Los Angeles County Museum of Art. He is now gearing up for the upcoming concert premiering new arrangements of Earth, Wind, and Fire songs by jazz artists Marshall Gilks, John Clayton, Derek Hodge, and the great Vince Mendoza. This program also includes the world premiere of a new Maurice White composition that was written 23 years ago for the Symphonic Jazz Orchestra. The tribute to Maurice White shows are scheduled for May 9th through 10th, 2026 at Long Beach's Carpenter Performing Arts Center. It will honor the legacy of Earth, Wind, and Fire founder Maurice White, and the concert series marks the first opportunity for audiences to experience White's powerful and expansive orchestral score that bridges eras and genres, captivating his creative spirit of its original moment while resonating freshly in this present day. We cover all of these shows, the Symphonic Jazz Orchestra, Mitch's career, and so much more. Enjoy this interview.
I'm doing well. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. I'm looking forward. This is a wonderful project. I'm looking forward to getting into it. So thank you for taking a minute out today.
No worries.
Talk to me a little bit about how this project came about, how you got involved, kind of the big bang, the beginnings of it, and then we'll peel back the layers.
Perfect. So the beginning really starts back, the Symphonic Jazz Orchestra is going to be 25 years old next year. So we've been around the block for a little bit. Early on in the process, George Duke, the great composer, producer, keyboardist, joined me as co-music director. So the first thing we sat down to talk about is commissioning. Our mission is to commission new music that blends jazz and classical. Not different from what Paul Whiteman did 100 years ago with George Gershwin. That's how Rhapsody in Blue was born.
Yeah.
So we kind of carry that tradition. So George had, you know, obviously worked a lot with Maurice White, and he was telling me Maurice has stepped away from the band. He's doing his own projects. He's got some time. Maybe he would consider it. Lo and behold, Maurice said yes. So here we have Maurice White writing a new work for this 68-piece jazz classical hybrid orchestra that we have, and we're like blown away. So Maurice gets to work. He has a writing partner, a guy named Bill Myers. They start working. And it's kind of like in the movies where they crumple it up and throw it away. This is no good. And I mean, this is months. This is like a 5-6 month process. So he's looking for that right idea. And over time, I get to sit with Maurice and say, hey.
Expedia and Visit Scotland invite you to come experience the beauty that awaits in Scotland. The sweep of wild coastlines, quiet lochs, and untamed landscapes. Fresh cuisine that feels rooted in the land. Come experience the kind of stillness that stays with you long after you leave. Plan your Scottish escape today at expedia.com/visit Scotland.
Would you mind? Can we document this? I mean, who knows what this is going to turn out. So
sure.
I put together a little documentary crew, a little video crew, just to be a fly in the wall. Watch Maurice work. I got to sit down with him and talk with him on camera, just kind of see what he was thinking about, what his process was. So he's cranking away, and he's got this great jazz background. I don't know how many people remember. He He was the drummer for Ramsey Lewis, the trio for 3 years, started out at Chess Records as a session drummer for a bunch of years before going off on his own. So great jazz chops, loves all that stuff. So he's trying to figure out how to integrate all the things that he is, the multifaceted. So as he's writing, he's starting to spin off these other ideas. You know, I've never really had female vocalists sing my Earth, Wind, and Fire song. Wouldn't it be cool to do new arrangements and feature some female voices? And it's like, sure. And you have this really cool orchestra. I love how you blend these different styles. Maybe we should do some new arrangements orchestrally. And he's curating the songs. Oh, you should do this, like this. And so this project keeps growing and growing and growing. The sad part is, as it grows, budgets grow, funding that we were pursuing never materialized, so it got put on the shelf. We thought it was lost. Maurice passed away in 2016. I reached back out to Bill Myers, his writing partner. Bill, would you still have any of those tracks and those charts? And Bill's like, man, that was like 4 moves ago when the technology is 800 years later. But he looked, couldn't find anything. So I was like, all right, that's it. Last year, I get a call from an old buddy of mine who knew about the Maurice Project. And he knew that I had done some interviews with him on camera. Would you have any of that? And now it's my turn to say, that was 5 years ago. I can check all the garages I know in the last 20 years. But lo and behold, in a hot garage was an unmarked box with the reels. So there's 5 reels of footage. We got them digitized as quickly as we could. They were actually in pretty good shape. And what we discovered on the B-roll is Maurice and Bill listening back to the piece they had written. So the score's gone, the charts are gone, the tracks are gone, but the music's there. So I was like, holy moly, after all these years, we can rebuild this. So I reached back out to Bill. I said, Bill, would you be up for this? You know, the tracks are, you know, you have to listen and extract everything, but would you be game? And of course he said, yeah. It took him like 4 months to pull everything out and do all that stuff. So we have a lost treasure of an orchestral work commissioned by Maurice White that's a little bit late to be premiered, but we will be premiering that May 9th and 10th in concert.
Wow. What did you learn through that process? I mean, when you get entrenched in an artistic endeavor, there's this idea. You want to honor his work. You want to honor the collective. It's such a wonderful project. But in that journey, you learn inextricably. You have revelations. What have you learned in this process?
Great question. So I think, you know, the bottom line is make sure the funding is up front.
Yeah. Yes.
That's probably the key ingredient after all of that.
Yeah.
I mean, there was obviously a lot of interest and promises. Oh, yeah, we can get you this and we're going to record it. And this is DVDs and all that stuff. So maybe get that up front as opposed to promises.
Yeah.
But the beauty is for me to be able to sit with Maurice and just kind of dig in and get inside. Because, listen, he's got one of the greatest bands on the universe. But as a person, he's very reserved, very thoughtful, very interesting to speak with, great sense of humor. So you see how he puts all these pieces together, which you may not think about when you see, you know, the great concerts and some of the big productions. There's some footage actually out there. I think April actually can help you with this. But we have some audio clips of Maurice talking about writing the piece. Like, how do I start? And do I just go full guns a-blazing? Or is it a slow, more thoughtful? Which, of course, is what he went for.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it's called Passages. And again, it's this 10, 11-minute piece that just sweeps out, goes through all these different moods and genres. There's a jazz groove, a Latin groove, some nice cadenzas. There's an alto sax feature in the piece, drum feature. Of course, kalimba. The African thumb piano is going to be heard in the piece. So it really does try to capture his essence
Yeah.
orchestrally.
So before we get into the Symphonic Jazz Orchestra, which is another story, I want to go back to the beginnings of your lineage. How did music make sense to you? Was that always going to be your life?
So I think I always blame Elton John as my first music teacher. I had Mrs. Hecker, we learned scales and piano, and it was awful. I quit. And that was the end of my, I was washed up at 10 years old. And then Elton John came on the radio. And he had all these great piano introductions to a song. It's like, whoa. So now I'm trying to figure out all these things. And then finally, my parents bought me a songbook. It's like, somebody wrote this down? What? And that's really where my music career started. And from then on, I was writing songs and arranging, and yeah, that was it.
So where are you from, LA originally?
Grew up in Miami.
Okay, in Miami. Okay, excellent. So talk to me about your time with the jazz orchestra. This is kind of the backbone of this project. How did you get involved? How have you evolved in this organism?
Yeah, so this is my baby. This is something I founded, like I said, almost 25 years ago. And it's a continuation of a lot of other very historical groups. So Paul Whiteman, I mentioned, did a lot of commissioning, one of which was Rhapsody in Blue. He commissioned a lot of composers. None of them quite had that pizzazz. But Duke Ellington, Ferdy Groffé, a lot of great writers of the time. John Lewis, Gunther Schuller, had a group called Orchestra USA in the 60s. Same idea. Let's give composers a chance to blend jazz and classical. He called it third stream. Same idea. Stan Kenton, Neophonic Orchestra, same idea. An expanded jazz band, classical elements. Let's commission people like John Williams and Pete Rugolo and all these great writers. Jack Elliott came along in the late 70s, early 80s, with a group called the American Jazz Philharmonic. Same idea. Let's commission, let's give all these great opportunities to composers to create new music. I was fortunate enough to work with Jack for 15 years. When he passed away, it was too important to let it go. So it's like, you know what? Let's take whatever we can rub together and let's start up a band. So yeah, so it's our little 68-piece jazz band. And the same premise, our mission is to commission, perform, and record new works that blend jazz and classical.
So how do you keep up with a group that big? I'm always amazed at large outfits because it's like taking a group picture. There's always going to be somebody blinking. There's always going to be maybe one guy coughing or sneezing. Like, how do you keep all of those music notes in rhythm?
So the beauty of LA is we have one of the greatest talent pools on the planet. So musically speaking, the Symphonic Jazz Orchestra is really the top studio players in town. So it's a 68-piece ensemble. The reality is there's about 100 musicians that go in and out of the ensemble depending on their schedules. So it's this talent pool that is unlike anything else, where they can read any groove, any style, and get it. We rehearse very little. They get the music ahead of time, they figure it out, and we do it. And we've got to work with all these great musicians over the years as soloists, Dave Grusin, Marcus Roberts, Lee Ritenour, Christian McBride, and it's just a blast. It's a blast for them too, because now they're hanging out with these people as well.
And the beauty of a lot of those guys is that they're the soundtrack to all of the movies and TV shows that we listen to. They're the
Completely.
conscious and subconscious brain matter that goes through generations of the American world mindset.
Yeah, so they're playing John Williams film scores and they're playing all the latest, recordings for Lady Gaga or Barbra Streisand or Billie Eilish. Some of them are part of, like the Hollywood Bowl Orchestra, former LA Phil members, those kinds of things. So incredible backgrounds. And a lot of them have recorded with Earth, Wind, and Fire over the years.
So wasn't there a movie called The Wrecking Crew that was about
Oh,
a
yeah.
group? Okay. Yeah. I remember that was fascinating because
Yeah.
Brian Jones was in there. It was kind of the backdrop to a lot of those iconic pet sounds and those albums that we've come to love.
Yeah, so that's Brian Wilson from the Beach Boys, used this group quite a bit, but they are in so, it's a great documentary. But it's a group, it's a rhythm section. There's about six or seven that kind of go in and out. But they did 80% of the pop records from whatever, 1965 to 1975.
You know, the one thing about our journey as music lovers and even conductors and performers is that it's that live experience. It's fine that you have it recorded, but when you can feel that energy, the particles like flying around a room, it's different. What was that first experience for you growing up? What did you see on stage that made you think, I want to do that, or it just moved you?
Yeah, definitely the first, like you said, live experience where it just like lit you up was when my middle school band played one of my arrangements.
Wow.
So for whatever reason, the band director was kind enough or stupid enough to say, sure, write something and we'll play it. And I had no idea what a score was. And I'm just, you know, writing these little inane songs. And here's the part for the clarinet and trumpet. And I'm starting to learn about keys and all that stuff. It was a complete train wreck.
Pool days call for cookouts and lots of laundry. This Memorial Day at Lowe's, save $80 on a Charbroil Performance Series 4-burner gas grill. Now just $199. Plus, get up to 45% off select major appliances to keep dishes, clothes, and food fresh. Having fun in the sun is easy with us in your corner. Our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Valid through 5/27. While supplies last, selection varies by location. See associate or Lowe's.com for details.
But they're playing my music.
Yeah.
And they're vibrating together. And when it did work, it was magnificent. Most of it didn't.
Yeah.
There was those two or three bars that did. It's like, hey, this is something special.
Yeah. You know, I think the one thing about living in America today with all the stressors and everything that's going on is that live music has kind of shifted into a more higher gear. It's really getting people to kind of feel like they're a part of something, taking them away from the headlines, so to speak. How much of living in this country in 2026 are you thinking about giving that audience a way of kind of, you know, getting into something else and taking them away?
Yeah, I mean, I think to your point, the pandemic really put the live concert experience in a whole new light.
Yeah.
You know, for however millennia, we knew that a musician would have an audience and they would interact and feed off of each other. And that would be great, whether it was in a ballroom or a court or a plaza or honky tonk.
Yeah.
There was that interplay. And then all of a sudden the audience is gone. So it's like, here, let me cut off your left arm and see how it feels.
Yeah.
It's insane. So to come back from that loss is palpable. You feel the audience wanting to be in that experience again, to connect with music, to be in that moment. So yeah, I think we all kind of had a newfound relationship. Obviously, as performers, we now value the audience even more. I think the audience values those experiences even more.
So being in this position of conducting and creating and orchestrating this music, what gets you up every day? What has pushed you throughout your career to love waking up every day and doing this?
Yeah, listen, I'm a kid in a candy shop. I get the greatest ensemble on the planet. I get to use them as a Crayola box. And certainly I've written pieces for them as well. But my main thing is not about me, is to get this ensemble to present music from around the world. We now have the George Duke Commissioning Prize, named after George when he passed away in 2013. So anybody on the planet can apply. We get submissions from all around the world, and we give composers a chance to create. It's a very rare opportunity. You know, symphonies are one thing, jazz bands are one thing, put them together, there's a handful of groups doing what we do on the planet. So to give composers a chance to write for that is extraordinary. And I've met some great young composers, and some composers that may not have been heard otherwise. So the chance to kind of spread the gospel, as it were. We have our one so far recording on Mack Avenue Records. We commissioned George Duke. He ended up writing a bass concerto for Christian McBride. I was hoping 10, 11 minute piece. Turned out to be a 22 minute epic concerto. Insanely difficult. He's on three different instruments, the upright, the electric, and the fretless electric. And it's just an amazing piece. So we got to do that. We recorded it sadly after he passed. Lee Ritenour wrote us a great piece. We got to record that. And historically speaking, we knew we had to do Rhapsody in Blue. So we got Bill Cunliffe, a brilliant piano player, as our soloist, with Peter Erskine on drums, Bob Hurst on bass, to kind of elevate the piano trio idea.
Yeah.
So we took our version of that.
Wow.
So yeah, so, you know, be able to be Johnny Appleseed.
Yeah.
Is what this is all about.
So you've mentioned figures like Stan Kenton and George Gershwin, and there's so many others that blended these two worlds of classical and jazz. And you hear so much. I remember reading the biography of Charlie Parker, like a part of him when that cymbal was thrown was that he had to get to the roots and the etymology of this American art form. And it's classical music. You know, jazz is the free part, but there are some, there's tenets, and it happens all the time between these two genres. So my question to you is this: if you could hop into a time machine and go back in time and see one orchestration of the perfect melding of both of those worlds, what stage, what performance, where are you going?
Oh, totally. Ferdy Groffet, because he was the orchestrator for Paul Whiteman's band. He did the heavy lifting for Rhapsody in Blue.
Yeah.
Rhapsody in Blue was written in about 3 weeks. Gershwin was going back and forth between New York and Boston, had a big Broadway show on the train. He's just sketching it out. So he's writing his part and just kind of a sketch for the band. Groffet ended up doing the lifting, taking his sketches and orchestrating it. So what you've seen, I got a chance to see the original scores. I got a chance to know Kurt Dieterle, who was the concertmaster for Paul Whiteman's band before he passed away. So to hear those stories and to see how it all came together, Groffet ended up writing it in 10 days.
Yeah.
Because they had a deadline. Here's the concert. You got to meet the deadlines.
Yeah.
So to watch him and to see how that was all pulled together would have been phenomenal.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned George Duke. You've mentioned even in the beginning with Elton John, there's all these figures that you've mentioned along the way in your musical journey. Ultimately, what have you learned from these legends and luminaries throughout your walk and your career that you in turn give to the younger players, the younger cats that are on stage with you?
Yeah, I mean, I think the journey is, you know, pretty much the same no matter who you are or where you get to. Some of us get to certain levels, some of us don't, but the journey doesn't change. I always say there's a disease that you get as a young person. Right now, there's still no cure for it. So I will continue doing what I do. But, you know, some people call it that light bulb moment. Ernie Watts has a great description. He says, it changes your DNA. The first time you hear Charlie Parker or John Coltrane, it's just something inside that just changes you and say, this is what you got to do.
Yeah.
So all of us are on pretty much that same journey.
Yeah.
You know, like you, I've got to interview a lot of great musicians over the years. I've got a radio show I get to do on K-Jazz. And I'd say the vast majority are telling that same story.
Yeah.
So they fall in love, they get hit by lightning, their DNA changes, however you want to describe it. That's what they got to do. So they do their thing, whether they land a great record deal, whether they end up being, you know, a hit on some recording or not, they're doing what they had meant to do. So that's it. You just got to support that journey. It's not, there's no end goal. There's no there. You just got to do your thing. So whatever that means, go for it.
Yeah. So I got to know, you know, when you had this dream early on after you listened to Elton John and wrapped your head around the possibility of being a musician and being a conductor and being in this world, what's been the difference between the dream that you had of entering this world and doing it and actually living this reality all these years? What's been the gray area in between the dream and reality?
Yeah, I mean, I think as we're young, we think, oh, you know, here's our life journey, and it's going to go. And it's not a straight line. It's not even close to a straight line. It's as circuitous as you can imagine.
Yeah.
So I guess the flip side to that, you know, giving some lessons is you got to have the stomach to be on the roller coaster. Because it ain't all going to work.
Yeah.
And there's going to be times when the rent is due and you got no money and the kids still need to be fed. And all of that stuff, what do you do then? So can you stomach and can you get through those lean times? Because there always is. So that's really that journey where you've got to have that fortitude to push through, even though when things are not so good. Obviously, there's a lot of good things that keep you going. So how do you balance those out?
Yeah.
So yeah, nobody really talks about that end of
Yeah,
it.
right, they don't. So the big show is on May 10th. And before we get into how you prep for this, I got to know, beyond preserving media and memories and making sure that these things that you create don't get stuck in a box somewhere, is there a level of catharsis? Is there some level of like relief that this all finally came together? Because it could have easily not have happened. I mean, it's like a passing train. Is there
Totally.
some level of you seeing this day come up where you're going to get actually presented where it's like, wow, this is crazy?
Yeah, no, definitely a pinch me moment because we tried over the years. Obviously, the first go around didn't work out. I was like, oh man, that's too bad. But it was still in the back of my mind. How can we do this? Sadly, Maurice got ill, passed away. All right, we should honor him now. Let's just figure out how we can do it. Steal the money if we have to. Let's get this piece promoted. That didn't work out. And then again, this amazing gift where somebody said, hey, do you have that footage? And we found it, and there was that piece. So yeah, so it's a
Amazing.
nice journey to be on.
Yes, absolutely. So how are you prepping? May 10th, what are you doing to get ready for this? This is a big deal.
Yeah, so two nights of concerts, May 9th, May 10th, Carpenter Performing Arts Center in Long Beach. Should I do the plug now?
Please, yeah. Let's start getting into the marrow.
SJOmusic.org, that's Symphonic Jazz Orchestra. So SJOmusic.org has all the details, but two nights of music. So similar when we had first talked to Maurice about these other elements, we were able to fold that in as well to the concert. So the main thing is the premiere of his orchestral piece, Passages. But we've brought in a bunch of amazing arrangers, John Clayton, Vince Mendoza, Marshall Gilkes, to do new interpretations like Maurice wanted. Here's his list. He curated everything down to the T. So we were able to finally realize that. He wanted a female vocalist to sing these songs. We got the award-winning Shantae Moore, great R&B and jazz vocalist, to sing a bunch of those songs. So it's kind of this multifaceted look at Maurice, orchestrally, instrumentally, vocally. So it's a lot of fun. So we've been working on these arrangements for months and months. Obviously, Bill Myers has rebuilt this piece, which took him quite a bit of time. Very painstaking work. I just salute him and his work there. So yeah, so it's all coming together. Music's ready to go. And yeah, we're
Wonderful.
ready to finally, after 23 years, premiere this long-lost commission.
So with this proverbial fork in the road before the shows and this long road that you've been on, I want to know this. Everyone has a perception of you, family, friends, fans, colleagues, but you run the show. What's your perception of you? Who do you think you are?
Wow, we're going there, huh?
The therapeutic part of the interview.
I think I'm still that high school kid doing all those crazy musical things. Everything I did in high school, I'm still doing. Composing, arranging, conducting, theater stuff, film stuff, radio stuff. I'm very fortunate where I get to still play and do the things I loved to do when I was little. So yeah, so I think I'm a pretty darn lucky guy.
Yeah, for sure. So let's one more plug for the shows, for your radio show, anything else going on, let's put it out there.
Yeah, so for your listeners, I do a weekly radio show on K-Jazz.
Folks knew the Colonel approved of his new honey chili crisp and jalapeno ranch sauces the moment he tasted them and said, "That's right. No notes, just absolute silence." Turns out some flavors don't need explaining. They just need dipping. It's saucy season at KFC. With new honey chili crisp and jalapeno ranch, get dipping with a boneless bucket today.
Prices and participation vary.
So that's 88.1 FM if you're in the Los Angeles area. Jazzandblues.org, that's how you can stream it. Monday nights, 9 p.m., I get to do my show, Beyond Symphonic Jazz. So I get to interview Wayne Shorter and Pat Metheny and Linda Ronstadt and Billy Cobham and talk about their stories and how they intersected with symphonic jazz. So we talk and play, so it's a lot of fun. So that's on the radio every week. And then the concert, of course, sjomusic.org. Run out and get your tickets. Yeah, it's pretty historic. So everybody loves Maurice. Everybody loves Earth, Wind, and Fire. So to be able to be here live to premiere, be in the audience for this new piece, pretty special.
I love it. I will put all these links in the show notes, and I'm going to give a shameless plug to K-Jazz. Being a guy in Kansas City, it's on my Google speaker downstairs all the time. I absolutely love everything that you guys do there. It's one of the best stations on the planet. So I totally stand behind it. I love it.
Appreciate that.
Hey, man, this has been great. Thank you so much. Thank you for taking a minute out today. Best of luck on the show, the radio show and the shows. Thank you for taking a minute out today.
And congrats to you. It's what, like 15 years?
15 years, yeah. Yeah.
It's no easy feat.
It's fun, man. It's just, it's like you said, I feel like I'm back as a kid and you're just tinkering around and going through music and people love it and that's it. It's wonderful.
It's a good way to go.
Thanks for listening and tuning into another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players and minds in Los Angeles, Kansas City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to Mitch for swinging on by the program. If you want to hear more Neon Jazz interviews, you can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Subscribe to us at YouTube. And for everything Neon Jazz, go to theneonjazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.
I sold my car in Carvana last night.
Well, that's cool.
No, you don't understand. It went perfectly. Real offer, down to the penny. They're picking it up tomorrow. Nothing went wrong.
So, what's the problem?
That is the problem. Nothing in my life goes as smoothly. I'm waiting for the catch.
Maybe there's no catch.
That's exactly what a catch would want me to think.
Wow, you need to relax.
I need to knock on wood. Do we have wood? Is this table wood?
I think it's laminate.
Okay, yeah, that's good. That's close enough.
Car selling without a catch. Sell your car today on Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.